Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of Nexium on Trial. I'm Casey Seiler, editor of the Times Union. Allison Mack appeared Wednesday in a federal courtroom in Brooklyn to receive sentence for the key role she played in the predations of Keith Raniere, the co-founder of what purported to be a self-improvement organization. The actress was confronted in court by several of the women victimized within Raniere's secret master-slave club, Dominus Obsequious Sororium, also known as DOS or The Vow.
She's a monster and a sociopath, and she has created so much harm for me, her victims, and so many people involved.
Times Union Justice reporter Rob Gavin and multimedia producer Jessica Marshall were on the scene to capture the day's drama. Here's a conversation between them and more from another dramatic passage in the fall of Nexium.
Step back,
Allison.
Everybody.
Allison, can we get a comment?
Let's start with the basic premise. Why were we there?
Allison Mack, a very high-ranking member of Nexium, a high-ranking member of DOS, the master-slave group in which women were forced to give lifetime vows of obedience to quote-unquote masters. And that involved some of the women having physical brands on their pelvic regions. Allison Mack was one of those people, but she also was someone who delivered the message from Raniere that it was to be done a certain way.
The person who's being branded should be completely nude and sort of held to the table like a sort of almost like a sacrifice. I don't know if that's a feeling of submission, you know?
It was some of the most damning evidence at the trial, and we later found out that Allison Mack actually provided that to federal prosecutors after she was convicted, and by that I mean she pled guilty on April 8th, 2019. From what we hear today, she basically immediately started cooperating.
So because of her cooperation, then going into this, most people were going to guess that her sentence, you know, which could have been up to 14 years, would have been significantly less. That was your thinking going in, right?
I told a lot of people, pretty much anybody who would speak to me, I would say, do not be expecting some really big sentence here because she was a cooperating witness. Allison Mack was willing to testify. So her lack of testimony was not because she didn't want to. It's because they didn't need her, or for whatever reason, they didn't call her. The feds did say she could have provided more information, but she was a cooperating witness. And that's, to get a little bit into the weeds here, there's something called the 5K letter. And if you get a 5K letter from the government, that's a way of saying, look, I want you to do what they would call a downward departure, go below sentencing guidelines. And that's what the judge did here. He felt that this was a case where Allison Mack deserved leniency, but he also felt she deserved time in prison. And that's why he sentenced her on each of the counts of racketeering and racketeering conspiracy in both cases to 36 months in prison. That's, I'll save everyone the math, that's 3 years. Allison Mack was immediately fined $20,000, which needed to be paid immediately, and she must perform 1,000 hours of community service. She does not have to report to federal prison until the end of September 29th, and she has asked the federal prison system if she can be placed in a prison in California, and this is going to shock nobody. As part of her conditions of release, she's not to contact anybody who was in DOS or NXIVM or whatnot. So if there was a V week this year at the end of August at Lake George, don't go, Allison.
Yeah.
Bad move.
You're going to be left out of that one. So, okay. So she was sentenced to 3 years. That is the big news of the day, but I want to kind of take us through the day a little bit because I thought it was interesting from my perspective outside. You know, I was with a bunch of people, local media, media from upstate, you know, from the capital region, and you had a whole swarm of paparazzi who actually didn't really know who Allison Mack was aside from her Smallville roles. They didn't know anything about NXIVM. They didn't really know why she was in court. They were just there to take her photo. And she came in the opposite way from the way folks had been walking into that courtroom, if you've seen photos or video of previous, you know, hearings there. And as she walked in, there was just this swarm, like everybody was on her and it was just really tight. She could barely walk and she had her head down and, you know, she's being escorted by several people. It was just kind of a mess and it took her forever to get into the courtroom. So, you know, the sensationalism of what happened today was pretty strong. But once she got into the courtroom, that's where you took it, and kind of tell us what the vibe was in the courtroom and how things went down in there.
Yeah, it was all very kind of subtle. I mean, so we're sitting there in the courtroom and you see all these people, reporters, prosecutors, defense attorneys. We did see Jessica Joan, who was one of the two women who spoke, one of whom was heard in the courthouse, another one by video. The other person being Tabby Chapman, who we spoke to last week. How did she strike you in, when you first met Allison? What was she like?
Magical, like charming, like wonderful. She was the kind of person that you wanted to be next to.
Once I was in the courtroom, I saw Moira Penza was in the courtroom. Moira was the prosecutor, the lead prosecutor for the case. She's since left the Eastern District of New York to go into private practice. But she was the lead prosecutor in the NXIVM case. And really, honestly, someone whose role cannot be understated for what she brought to that case. You had the prosecutors on one side with Tanya Hajar, who's taken over that role. You had two FBI agents, including Michael Wegener, who was a federal agent who testified at the trial. And then over, you had the attorneys for Allison Mack.
Just for, you know, just going back outside for a second, one of the other groups of people that we caught going into the courtroom were three of the NXIVM Five. There are the hangers-on, you know, the true believers who are still loyal to Keith Raniere. There were three of them. They were wearing matching suits. Did you see them in the courtroom as well?
The NXIVM Five, as they've called themselves, is a group of people who include, these are all men, so we didn't see Nikki Klein, who is sort of the de facto leader of the group. She wasn't there. We didn't see Daniel Roberts, who is someone who performed branding ceremonies. But these are people that have been out there spreading the message that Keith Raniere was wronged by a corrupt prosecutorial system and that he deserves due process that they believe was not given to him. And it was a good question as to whether they would show up because Allison Mack was as ardent a supporter of Keith Raniere as you would find. That's what's so fascinating about these cases is you have people who protest on behalf of Keith Raniere, and many times they're at odds with people who were far deeper in NXIVM than any of these people were. That's where it'll get like really interesting. And, you know, a few months you're going to have Nancy Salzman sentenced. I mean, here was the person who was the co-founder of it. And obviously, whenever she's sentenced, I think that'll be an interesting one as well.
How did Allison look?
When I saw Allison Mack, I didn't do a double take at first. Because the last time I saw Allison Mack in person was back in 2018. And that was right around the time. Then I think, again, maybe in 2019, I might have seen her. But when I saw her in 2018, Allison Mack was gaunt. She was very, very thin. She had just come out of DOS. She was being arraigned. This was still very, very fresh and whatnot. Today, she seemed much more relaxed. She seemed, I mean, it sounds funny to say it, but she did look healthier. I mean, she did. In some ways, I think she may have looked, some people thought she looked younger, different hairstyle. And I saw her before the proceedings. She was kind of smiling a little bit, talking with her attorneys.
What happened? I know you said there were two victim impact statements, one from Tabby and one from Jessica Joan. So tell us about those. What did they say in a nutshell?
The first statement came from Tabby Chapman, and Tabby is a former NXIVM coach. We had her on the podcast last week.
There were times when my relationship with Allison was, you know, great, like a good friend. And then sometimes even on a dime, like things would be great. And then I would make a comment and this sort of like lashing out would occur. And I would leave crying with my head held down and, you know, not able to really function for days.
She spoke about this experience she had in NXIVM with Allison and the fact that it started out, she was a fan and she was thrilled that this famous person called her. Oh my God, you know, and this, they wanted to work for her. And then she followed her to Vancouver. And then she later worked for her in Albany. And when she moves to Albany, Tabby explains, that's when things change. Allison becomes abusive and she becomes almost like a sister. She said that she felt she needed to protect at times, but then other times she felt that she needed maybe a little bit of protection from Allison, that she could be cruel. She would tell her that she, without NXIVM, she wasn't worth anything. And at one point, Tabby gave a quote, and I'm going to read this because this is about as jaw-dropping a quote as you'll hear in a courtroom a lot of times. And this was what Allison Mack told Tabby, according to Tabby. She said that when she was in Albany, she offers this anecdote, tells Mac, reminding Allison Mac, says, "I cannot forget the moment you told me that being raped came with a choice to either suffer during it or to choose happiness and joy." And wow. that is, you know, it's a jaw-dropping quote to hear, but it's not shocking when you consider what came out during the NXIVM trial. It's right along the lines of the kind of things that Keith Raniere would say. Comments like young children perfectly happy having sex with adults. I mean, so this case has been a case where these just absurdly outlandish comments come in and you're like, oh my God, who could possibly think that? And the answer is people who support Keith Raniere and Keith Raniere. So that was the comment there. But after Tabby spoke on the video, then we had Jessica Joan. And having seen Jessica testify, I was very interested in what this was going to be. Because when she testified, the anger against Allison Mack was clear. And today, I think that was just boosted up even more. She did not wait long before basically just tearing into Allison Mack. Said Allison Mack is a predator and an evil human being. Very early on, that's what she said about Allison Mack. At another point, she said, Allison Mack, she can blame Keith all she wants, but she is a monster cut from the same cloth. She went on to describe her at various times as sadistic, a quote unquote demon, a quote unquote sociopath. And then this is someone who was talking about, said she experienced abuse as a child and makes a point of saying that. And then says after that, Allison Mack and Keith Raniere are the most evil monsters I've ever met. She compares Keith Raniere and Allison Mack to other notorious figures with the line, she was the Ghislaine Maxwell to Keith Raniere's Jeffrey Epstein, which is everybody familiar with the Epstein story will know that Ghislaine Maxwell is accused in federal court in New York City of providing Jeffrey Epstein, the late Jeffrey Epstein, with teenage girls. Well, we know based on her plea and the evidence in this case that Allison Mack provided women for Keith Raniere, at least four women that we know of. So that was a pretty powerful statement.
How
do
you feel about this?
All right, back up for just talking to you. Back up a little bit.
Yes, and outside the courtroom, after the proceedings ended, she kind of echoed that statement. She was surrounded by the media again, much like Allison was, and she gave a similar statement to what she said.
She's a monster and a sociopath, and she has created so much harm for me, her victims, and so many people involved. My message to the other victims is that now we can really begin to heal. Justice has been served. She's gonna do some time, and we're on the other end of this, and she's really irrelevant at this point.
I also want to note that before the end of the proceedings, Frank Carlotto of the Frank Report, who was once affiliated with NXIVM and sort of turned away and, you know, started reporting on them, he came out and he sort of gave us an update, an unofficial update, if you will.
Are you surprised by anything you've heard in the courtroom?
No, I'm not surprised. I thought Jessica was a little strident. I thought maybe a slight tone of forgiveness might have been appropriate. And, you know, I think Allison's at least partly a victim. She's not full perpetrator. And I think she was, you know, abused over a long period of time. You know, personally, I hope she gets a lenient sentence.
Lenient,
yeah.
That was all going on after those victim impact statements were read. How did she react to those statements?
I was looking closely at her. At first, it was kind of hard to tell. But as for how she looked, I think Allison definitely had tears in her eyes. They were welling up. I mean, there's no question that Jessica Jones did not pull any punches. But hey, there's no reason why Jessica Jones should. She's a victim of Allison Mack's sex trafficking. So I've seen people very angry at sentencings for reasons less egregious than a case of this magnitude.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with more of what happened at the Allison Mack sentencing in Brooklyn this week.
If you're enjoying NXIVM on Trial, be sure to check out its sister podcast, The Eagle. I'm Jessica Marshall, host of The Eagle. Each week, we'll take a look inside the newsroom at the Times Union, the Capital Region's oldest and largest newspaper. We'll discuss the week's top stories, and we'll talk to the award-winning reporters who write them. Listen at timesunion.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. It's NXIVM on Trial. We're talking to Times Union reporter Rob Gavin. Again, he and I went down to Brooklyn this week where we tag team covered the sentencing of former TV actress and NXIVM higher-up Allison Mack. Where we left off, the victim impact statements had been read by Jessica Joan and Tavi Chapman. And then, Rob, tell us what happened next in the courtroom.
After the victim impact statements are read, what typically happens is the judge will then ask the prosecution what they think and the defense what they think, and then give the victim an opportunity to speak. So that's exactly what happened here. This was no different. The prosecution's recommendation to the judge mirrored what they had asked in their sentencing memo, talking about how Allison Mack provided substantial cooperation, that she assisted with the investigation into Keith Raniere almost immediately after she was pled guilty. And, you know, and honestly, I think what that meant was that she was always going to get what they call a 5K letter. Once you provide that level of cooperation that they think is worth it, it's not a get out of jail free card. I think Allison's lawyers wanted it to be on the record because they said to the judge that they wanted a sentence without any prison time. They mentioned how well she's been doing the last 3 years. The judge was not going to go that far. So once both sides give their arguments, then what's left is you have the defendant has an opportunity to speak. They don't always do, but Allison Mack, he did decide that, you know, she wanted to speak. She figured that it was, you know, something that was in her best interest to do. And so Allison Mack stands up. Like I said, she was very different today than the last time I saw her. So she gets up, and the first thing Allison Mack had said was, "I stand before you totally filled with remorse and regret." And she said very quickly after that, "I renounce Keith Raniere and all of his teachings. said she also said she understood that what she chose, what she did in her past can't be undone. She was thankful to the judge, the court, and she even thanked the victims for being so brave to come out and speak about her. I mean, she welled up a few times in the eyes. She talked about the fact that 3 years ago when she was on there, she thought it was like a worst nightmare to return home to her parents' house in California, but that basically it turned out to be a blessing in disguise because she was able to find her family and herself and just sort of get her life back together and away from Keith Raniere. It was a relatively short statement, but she thanked the judge saying that he allowed her to go to school where, you know, she took classes at UC Berkeley. That's a pretty good school, and very thankful.
All right, so there's only one thing left. The judge has to speak, right? What did the judge say?
So the judge has an interesting decision here, obviously. This isn't Keith Raniere, who was convicted at trial. It was the top of the food chain. So it wasn't Claire Bronfman, who was not the top of the food chain, but was probably the top, viewed anyway as the top of the money chain for NXIVM, and certainly someone who went well out of her way to not reject Keith Raniere. Allison Mack was a cooperating witness, and the judge talked about the interesting balance, really delicate balance between having to weigh Allison Mack's crimes and the fact that really, in his view, she was a victim. He mentioned that he received 14 letters on behalf of Allison, but also six letters that were written by victims in the case, including the two victims who spoke. He talked about DOS a lot. The judge told Allison Mack, by many accounts, you were able to use your status as a well-known public figure to gain credibility and influence with NXIVM and DOS recruits. You abused this position of power to persuade and pressure women to join DOS. You capitalized on your celebrity and these individuals' eagerness to be close to you. And then he basically said how she claimed that this was women's empowerment and misrepresented a lot of facts, including the fact that Keith Raniere was involved in DOS and that there would be sexual conduct required with Keith Raniere. He talked a lot about the collateral, which is really the blackmail material that women in DOS were forced to give up to join this organization and really became victims, which we now know included everything from having to be sleep deprived because they had to answer readiness texts at all hours of the night. They were 500 calorie or less diets. Basically, in one case, we know there was a slave who was told to wear a collar. That was a chain, but it was, you know, like a regular chain, but it symbolized the collar. And of course, there was the branding of women branded with Keith Raniere's initials. And if you listen to the language, I thought he was going to bring the hammer when he said, you know, this court in sentencing Mr. Raniere made it very clear how seriously it views the conduct for which he was convicted. When it comes to DOS and the monstrous crimes he committed in connection with that organization, you were an essential accomplice. The judge goes on to say to Allison Mack, you willingly enslaved, destabilized, and manipulated other women so that when they were at their most vulnerable, when they believed that they owed you total obedience and that anything less than that would cause them serious personal and financial harm, when you had taken away their last sense of agency to make their own choices, you gave them special assignments to satisfy Mr. Raniere's sexual interests. And then he added, sort of just at the very end there, Mr. Raniere could not have done that without you. You did that together. And he basically called her a willing and productive ally as opposed to a passive enabler. But then the judge mentions, like I said, that there was a fact that she also was, in addition to being a high-ranking enforcer for Raniere, she also had to give up collateral. She also was physically branded on her pelvis. She was on those same diets. I mean, we know that she was thin, real thin. The judge, he said that, you know, he said, you know, in the language of DOS, you were a slave as well as a master, and that even her victims were almost a little ambivalent. Many of them see you as their abuser and as a fellow victim. So between that and the fact that you did show remorse and whatnot, I mean, the judge credited all that, the fact that you came forward, and altogether what that equals is the sentence we got, which was 3 years. It's two sentences of 36 months, but they run concurrently.
So what was your reaction to the verdict? What, you know, what did you think? Because we talked earlier about how you thought she would have, you know, the mitigating factors would reduce the sentence. So what's your takeaway on the sentence?
My take is that I'm not surprised. I actually thought it could be a lower sentence. And I know there was a lot of people texting me and I saw on Twitter that they were very surprised this wasn't longer. I think there were people that were expecting a really long sentence, that there are some people that looked at the conduct and more so than the cooperation. But that's just not the way the legal system works. The legal system will give credit to defendants who they believe show remorse, who provided cooperation, particularly, you know, in the Eastern District of New York, which I have some familiarity covering. I know there's people in organized crime cases that have killed numerous people and gotten time served for multiple murders. So I'm not surprised at all. I think what was a little bit different in this case was the fact that the feds had gone out of their way to say that she could have given more cooperation. Allison Mack didn't go off scot-free, right? I mean, she's not getting no jail time. I think that would be a very, very, if that was what she was expecting going into today, I think that would have been a really unrealistic thing to expect given the crimes that happened. Allison Mack will be allowed to report to federal prison at the end of September, on September 29th, which is a luxury Claire Bronfman was not afforded. I think the message has been clear based on the first three sentences we've seen here. The only one who cooperated is serving 3 years. Person who did not. And just a little context, Claire Bronfman's sentencing guidelines were 21 to 27 months. She got 81 months, three times the maximum of that. Allison Mack's sentencing guidelines were 14 years to 17 and a half years, and she got 3 years in prison. So mitigating factors play a huge part. Cooperation, acceptance of responsibility are a huge part of that. And I think was the story here today, is that Allison Mack obviously had done a number of heinous things while in NXIVM and DOS, but as the judge saw, unlike some of the other defendants, namely Keith Raniere and Claire Bronfman, the judge felt that she's at least mitigated that, and that she's on the road to maybe starting to dig her head a little bit out of this absolutely horrific case and so many victims, and just something we've never seen before.
Absolutely. Eager to put it behind her, I'm sure.
Step back, Allison. Everybody.
Allison, can we get a comment?
Guys, step back.
Now, just to, you know, finish off our little timeline of the sentencing, Allison left the courthouse the way that she came out the front. And of course, all of the cameras and all of the paparazzi and everybody was still there, and she could barely get out of the building. I mean, they were just relentless. You know, it took them like 5 minutes to get down to the end of the block.
Let's go.
Allison, what do you think of the other first line slaves that didn't get time?
You know, everybody was asking her questions about how she felt and, you know, was she surprised and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, one reporter even asked her if she was interested in participating in a Smallville reunion, which she didn't answer. She didn't answer anything. She had her hands like over her face and, you know, it was very tense for a minute there. But then she, you know, shuffled off and that's the end of the story. It was an interesting day at that courthouse for sure.
It was a real pack. You hear about pack journalism and, you know, a pack of reporters going up to someone they want to get information from. This was pretty intense as packs go.
Yeah.
This was far more intense than I recall the last Allison Mack pack event being. And I obviously not just Allison Mack. We've seen this, you know, with any time there's a celebrity or a big news personality in that time where there's, you know, cameras, like you said, the paparazzi, the cameras go after them. And in this case, you know, it's kind of funny because we kind of got a lot of our answers from Allison Mack, I think, in court. I think we've heard a lot from Allison Mack on tape and on trials and emails. And I think it's unrealistic to think that she would comment this week, let alone from someone asking about a small little reunion. I wouldn't wait by the phone on that one ever happening. You know, that's part of the whole situation for Allison Mack, and it's now in, like, her case, it's in the past right now.
You've been listening to Nexium on Trial, featuring Times Union Justice reporter Rob Gavin and multimedia producer Jessica Marshall. Please remember that the Times Union's journalism is supported by its subscribers, and through July 11th, you can get full digital access for 26 weeks for just 99 cents. Not per week, but 99 cents for the whole 6.5 months. Visit timesunion.com for more information. I'm Casey Seiler. Thanks for listening, and please check back for more developments in the weeks to come.